Our next conversation today is with Hetal Doshi, who's one of four Democrats running for the Democratic nomination for Colorado Attorney General. At this point, three. Ms. Doshi, along with Michael Dougherty and David Seligman, have agreed to appear on this program, and Secretary of State Jenna Griswold has not agreed to appear and take questions. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate
your time.
Thank
you so much for having me.
I understand that there's a lot within the portfolio of an Attorney General, but what would you consider to be your number one priority if elected?
Well, I think the number one priority for any candidate in this moment is existential, which is defending Colorado in terms of a rule of law attack. And so holding the federal government to account when they come for Coloradans, whether it's democracy building or rule of law attacks, and making sure that we protect the individual and civil rights and liberties of Coloradans is top of mind for me.
I mean, certainly it's easy to make a name for yourself in Democratic politics by being anti-Trump these days.
Of course.
How do you distinguish threats to Colorado and just this is popular because it gets me in the headlines for opposing Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think this is something that I talk a lot about on the campaign trail. I have said many times that being anti-Trump on its own is not a complete political philosophy. And in fact, I think that the rise of the second Trump presidency is illustrative of that point, which is to say there are social and economic conditions that led to Donald Trump being elected for the second time. And for people like members of my own family, I'm a first-generation American, voting for this president. And so for me, I think that the broader point that I'd like to make and the thing that I intend to prioritize as your next attorney general is making sure that we build a better future on the other side of a Trump presidency that is durable and enduring in terms of our economic and legal structures.
When you look at Attorney General Phil Weiser's panoply of lawsuits against the Trump administration, are there any that you think were overreach or you don't think are worth Colorado's time? Do you think that there were missed opportunities in terms of cases that he should have brought or should have joined?
I think that, so General Weiser, just for some statistics for the audience, the Democratic Coalition of AGs has filed in excess of, I think, 105 or 110 lawsuits against the Trump administration. The state of Colorado has joined or led approximately 65 of those lawsuits. I think that at an aggregate level, that's about right in terms of the types of issues that affect Colorado and our Colorado way of life. And so in terms of answering the question about lawsuits I wouldn't have brought, there isn't an easy answer or a specific answer of a case that I wouldn't have brought. I think cases that were brought in the first 2 to 3 months of the administration look very different today than the cases that are brought now because they're much more specific today. And so in terms of missed opportunities, I do think that the General Weiser's standard of is the conduct unlawful and does it harm Coloradans is the right test. I would add some meat on the bones of that second part of the test to say the harm to Coloradans can feel like an amorphous concept. And so to me, the harm to Coloradans that really matters in terms of using resources to fight the federal government as opposed to looking inward would be, is the harm to one of our deeply held values or safety? Or number two, is there a specific economic harm in the form of funding or opportunities like SNAP benefits or NCAR funding come to mind?
Is there any point in which resource management within the office plays a part in which suits to bring or join?
It's top of mind. It's one of the first questions. And this is something that as someone who has led inside the government, in my last role with the Department of Justice, I led teams of more than 800 lawyers and professional staff, and every day I had to make trade-off decisions. If I'm suing Google, that means there's another case that I might not be able to file. And so I think about this question of taking on Donald Trump precisely through this lens, because I will not have this administration and his cronies make sure that they set an agenda for us. It should be the other way around, which is why I've often said that Trump as a concept, as a person, as an administration, should not be the way that the Democratic Party should define our values.
You've never held elected office before.
Correct.
You don't have the history in party politics that a lot of other folks who run for statewide office do.
Well, I have a different kind of history in party politics as a public corruption prosecutor and investigator, right? And so I've looked at both Democrats and Republicans in making sure that anyone who raises their right hand and takes the oath of office is a responsible steward of the public's trust.
Why run for attorney general as opposed to something else that would give you a different level of experience within government? Obviously, you have the prosecutorial experience, but state legislature, county DA, something like that, where you could put your tools and talents to use without saying, I'm going to step from outside of politics to becoming the chief legal officer for Colorado.
I actually think it's because of what I think the attorney general's job is. This is, of course, a partisan election, but at its best, law enforcement seeks neither fear nor favor in terms of the enforcement, the even-handed enforcement of law. And so I think it is precisely because of my lack of background in terms of deeply partisan politics, as someone who has called balls and strikes as I saw them along the way, that gives people confidence in the idea that this is the perfect person in this moment to hold the administration to account, but also to build a better future for Coloradans that is not steeped in being the red team or the blue team or the left or the right, but more, much more so through the sense of how can government work for people.
Certainly to that end, H.G. Wiser also hadn't held elected office, and he seemed to get the hang of going after the Trump administration pretty fast. Where would you use the power of the office in a way that has not been a particular focus for Attorney General Wiser?
So I think there are a couple of areas, and they're products of circumstance, right? Because I think the second Trump administration has really appended the rule book in terms of how they have proceeded. And we've seen in a lot of really powerful ways how much of our democracy was really held together by norms and tradition as opposed to necessarily the force of law in some circumstances. So two areas come to mind immediately. First is, of course, the broader umbrella of environmental policy and particularly water law issues. I think there's so many reasons that water will become ripe as an issue for the next attorney general, not the least of which is the Colorado River Compact negotiations that are in process and have failed recently, and so we face a court challenge. But second, all of the rollback on the federal level from the Environmental Protection Agency and the Environment and Natural Resources Division, all of those issues are starting to become ripe in a variety of different ways, whether it's the sale of public lands, whether it's bringing coal-fired plants back online, whether it's thinking about forever chemicals, or just basic enforcement of our emission standards. And so the next attorney general is going to be asked to step into the breach in terms of environmental policy through a complicated dynamic with the federal government, and that's an area where I have a lot of expertise and experience. And then,
I ask you quickly on the Colorado River Compact?
Yeah.
When it comes to water, what is the best ground on which Colorado should fight this, right? Between the states working something out, having the federal government intervene, litigation that could possibly go to the Supreme Court, where's the best possible outcome for Colorado?
Well, I think anyone that's watching the news right now knows that litigation that ends up in the Supreme Court is probably not the best place for us to be, right? Although I'm well suited to take that on as an expert in federal courts, of course. But I think that the best place to fight this battle is to go back to the negotiating table with the lower basin states. States, and this is a wrinkle that I think sometimes is lost in the broader coverage of the story, which is if we end up adverse to the lower basin states in this fight in terms of water, the very states that are our partners in taking on the federal government suddenly become our opposing parties in this litigation. And so we have every reason to return to the negotiating table. And the principle that I think governs this is a shared sense that we don't want the federal government coming in and making this decision for us. And so I will be a vociferous champion for Colorado and making sure particularly our ranching and agricultural communities have the resources that they need. But everyone's going to have to make some tough compromises. And so we need to make sure that those compromises are rooted in equality and parity and fairness, and that Colorado is getting a fair shake in that negotiation.
I interrupted you halfway through your answer about where you would focus the office in a way that perhaps H.G. Wiser has not.
So number one was environmental policy. But number two, I think that we are seeing just a broader consolidation of power that certainly H.G. Wiser has spent a lot of focus on in terms of antitrust and consumer protection issues. But I think the velocity and the pace of those cases is going to increase in the next 4 years because the federal government has completely abandoned any semblance of enforcement with respect to these issues. We're seeing that just in this past week, right, where the Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount deal was cleared by a federal government pretty quietly with a clearance statement that doesn't make any sense. And so the question will be before the states, like the state of Colorado, to say, how are we going to use our limited resources and in which direction will we put those resources to? I am someone who believes that our economic opportunity and competition in the marketplace is the other side of the coin in terms of our democratic freedoms. And so when we see consolidation in the media space in particular, and I have some background in this, having blocked a massive publishing merger before, that is really critical to the rest of our civil liberties here in Colorado.
Let's talk about crime and public safety. Specifically, we've talked a lot about the use of mass surveillance systems in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Flock gets a lot of attention, but it goes by other brand names as well.
Of course.
What are the guardrails that you would seek to have the state put on this? It wouldn't be within your purview, but you'd be a big voice on the issue when it comes to mass surveillance in public.
Well, so certainly I think the guardrail should start with the Fourth and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution, right? And making sure that as we have emerging technologies, that we don't fetishize the technology in a way that somehow makes us think that we can abandon those principles. But to take a really big step back, because I think that the questions around surveillance that are posed by Flock or Axon or any of those surveillance systems are a subset of a much bigger problem, which is the widespread collection of data about Americans writ large by private companies, and then the sale and commodification of that data, whether it's to the federal government or to the other companies. And so that is why my background and experience in having taken on big tech in the most consequential battles of our time and succeeding really matters, because it makes me an authoritative voice, not just here in Colorado on this issue, but more nationally as well, in making sure that any big tech company that seeks to provide those types of products here in Colorado know they have a formidable adversary in me in terms of making sure that Coloradans are protected. And
But what are those specific guardrails? I mean, you're saying, I have the experience to deal with this issue, I have an understanding, but you're not telling me what you would do.
Well, the Attorney General's job would be to enforce the laws that the legislature implements, and so that is what I would do, is to be a voice with the legislature to say, here's how you craft laws around surveillance policy that survive constitutional scrutiny with respect to the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. But more importantly, I think it is that what would I do would be framed around the question of holding big tech and other companies that collect that data also to account.
Did you support the legislation the Democrats tried to and didn't muster enough support for in the last legislative session that would have required judicial warrants for access to surveillance camera systems?
I did not.
And why did you not support that?
Because I think that there are problems with respect to the constitutionality of some of that legislative effort, and I also think that there needs to be additional clarity around appropriate uses of information by law enforcement in exigent circumstances in ways that plainly satisfy the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. But I have deep, grave concerns about the use of mass surveillance as a blunt instrument, as I've already talked about here, and that my prior record supports. And so I look forward to working with the legislature to craft a bill that I think could satisfy the courts.
I mean, was this off by a hair or was it off by a mile? I mean, law enforcement was uniformly opposed to this bill, and Democrats then split on it and the bill died. What was your assessment of it?
I think it's probably, and I don't mean to split the baby, but I genuinely believe that it's not a hair, but it's not quite a mile. I think it is directionally in the right place, but the reason that I think law enforcement was uniformly opposed to it is because we are being asked as a community, particularly law enforcement communities, to solve for public safety issues. And so when you see a spike in car thefts, for example, in Denver, communities want something done about that. We can use technology and tools to achieve those goals, but what we are doing right now is plainly not sufficient, right? And so I think finding the way to bridge the divide between those two organizations or those two constituencies is really a question of meeting somewhere in the middle of where we are right now.
AG's office doesn't prosecute street crime, but what would you do as AG to impact crime in Colorado?
Well, we have great DAs that prosecute street crime, as you've just acknowledged, but I think that the Attorney General is a really important force multiplier in making sure that organized crime and cartels and conspiracies are dealt with. And that's what I think has been the most powerful driver in a downward reduction in crime, is not to just prosecute or to focus on prosecuting street-level offenders, but actually taking on the criminal enterprises and the financial backing for these organizations. And as Attorney General, I am certainly committed to doing that.
Are there any laws on the books in Colorado that, if challenged, you would decline to defend in court?
Nothing that comes to mind immediately. The paradigmatic question here is usually the question around Tabor, right? And what I have said about Tabor, and I want to be very clear about this, is that I think the Colorado Supreme Court has indicated that it is, in fact, constitutional. And so I support repealing Tabor in the first instance through the ballot box and would be a voice to do that, because I think Tabor straitjackets the state of Colorado, particularly in this budget environment.
Complete repeal.
I think so. And then in addition to that, I would be supportive of making sure that future tax increases are approved, by, again, at the ballot box or through the populace, right? Which allows us to balance that sense, this hearts and minds question, because Tabor is widely popular in Colorado. I think it's 62 or 63% of Coloradans support it. But there is a bigger hearts and minds question around people feeling like they are giving more and more money away to the government and feeling like they are getting less and less. And it is compounded by the budget environment that we are in. And so I think showing proof of concept in the ways that government can show up and make people's lives better is an important piece of that ballot box strategy. But I think it's a really dangerous thing when an attorney general who's the chief law enforcement officer for the state suddenly says, here are these laws that I'm not going to defend writ large, right? And certainly there are circumstances under which depending on standing and all sorts of other questions, that I may be in a position where I say I don't defend this particular law. But I don't want a future attorney general candidate to say I don't support reproductive rights, and so I will not defend a law or defend a challenge to Colorado's constitutional right to seek an abortion here.
I want to make sure that we're clear on the Tabor issue, and perhaps what we're talking about is a distinction without a difference. But it sounded like you were saying repeal Tabor wholly, then stand up a separate mechanism by which voters would continue to vote on tax increases, as opposed to repeal all of the parts of Tabor except for the portion that allows people to vote on tax increases.
It's the latter.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. Does it matter if Colorado's next attorney general has courtroom experience? You have it. David Seligman has it. Michael Dougherty has it. Jenna Griswold doesn't have it. Does it matter?
Yes.
Why?
Number of reasons. And I think this is actually a broader question than just courtroom experience. I think it's substantive legal experience writ large, right? The two often go hand in hand, but I want to make sure that that distinction is clear. So in this particular moment, we've been talking about using scarce resources to take on a very powerful federal government that has more resources than we do, right? It's critical that the attorney general not be a figurehead, but someone who can substantively engage with teams, public servants that are choosing to show up every single day to do this job and facing really difficult circumstances in doing so. And so I, as a leadership philosophy, do not believe that, you know, it's say as I do or not as I say or whatever the expression is. I think it's important when you're asking people to do hard things, which is what we are asking them to do right now, that you have done them before and that you are willing to do them again. And so the reason that courtroom experience matters more than ever, and for the modern AG, it matters not just in like public safety types of cases, but it also matters in antitrust cases, it matters in consumer protection cases, is that we are constantly going to be having to make hard decisions about which cases to litigate and how to litigate them. The attorney general has to be a credible voice at the table in order to do that, and that's why I think that experience matters.
Jenna Griswold has falsely claimed that she argued before the Supreme Court. Is that parsing words? Is that disqualifying dishonesty? Is it something in between? How do you read that?
I don't think it's parsing words. I think that it is incorrect to say that I have argued to the Supreme Court that if you're not the person that's writing the brief and standing up in front of court, that matters. There is a special licensure and admission to the Supreme Court bar, and it is small for a reason. And so I think that that is problematic.
Is Jenna Griswold qualified to be Attorney General?
I'm running for office, and I'm running for this spot because I think that I have the best substantive qualifications. Does she meet the minimum constitutional standards? Of course she does, right? But that's not sufficient. That's not a reason to elect someone, in my humble opinion. I think that in this moment, the people of Colorado are faced with the question of hiring their lawyer for perhaps the greatest difficult legal landscape we've ever seen in modern history. You should pick the best, most qualified, most well-rounded leader and lawyer, and I think I'm that lawyer.
But not on technical terms, in the sense that voters would look at somebody and say, are they qualified to hold the office? Is she qualified to hold the office?
I think that there are some substantive gaps in Secretary Griswold's backgrounds.
Is there a reason why you've backed your language off from previously when you've said she's not qualified?
I think what I said last week when I was asked this question is to say I don't think that she is fully qualified based on substantive gaps. I think those are two entirely reconcilable statements.
This, I think, is a separate question. We have covered a series of missteps, mistakes, and errors in judgment that Secretary Griswold has made in the Secretary of State's office that raise questions about her competency, which I think is a separate question than her qualifications. Do you believe she's competent to be Attorney General?
Yes, I think she is competent. She is a licensed lawyer. She has led an office before. I think that certainly the track record is something that she should be accountable for and answer for. And that has been an enormous source of frustration for me, as you've probably seen on the campaign trail, that she has missed a number of forums and opportunities to engage on that record competency and accountability question.
You, Michael Dougherty, David Seligman have all raised serious questions about whether Jenna Griswold is qualified to be Attorney General. But the fact is, the three of you remaining in this race all but assures that she will, in fact, be the next Attorney General. Are you putting your personal ambition ahead of Colorado having a qualified Attorney General?
Absolutely not. I think that, look, nothing about the landscape of this race 14 days out from the election is different than what I expected it to be when I joined this race in June of last year. I was the last candidate to enter this race, and I did so because I looked at the landscape and I looked at the particular requirements of this moment and concluded that we needed a different, complete set of skills and that I had that set of skills and background to meet this moment. And so I'm aware that Secretary Griswold a couple of months ago released a poll that shows that as a result of high name recognition that she has high support in this moment. But I would tell you that elections are decided in the last 45 to 60 days, a time period that followed that poll. And there are a number of objective indicators that suggest and that show pretty clearly that I have a lot of momentum to meet this moment and to win this race.
Helle Doshi, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.